So with the words, let us reach for the world that ought to be, we go now to the conclusion of President Barack Obama's acceptance speech for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Somewhere today, in the here and now, in the world as it is, a soldier sees he's outgunned but stands firm to keep the peace. Somewhere today, in this world, a young protester awaits the brutality of her government but has the courage to march on. Somewhere today, a mother facing punishing poverty still takes the time to teach her child, scrapes together what few coins she has to send that child to school, because she believes that a cruel world still has a place for that child's dreams. Let us live by their example. We can acknowledge that oppression will always be with us and still strive for justice. We can admit the intractability of deprivation and still strive for dignity. Clear-eyed, we can understand that there will be war and still strive for peace. We can do that, for that is the story of human progress. That's the hope of all the world. And at this moment of challenge, that must be our work here on Earth. Thank you very much.
The conclusion there, Barack Obama accepting the Nobel Peace Prize, the lecture he gave at Oslo City Hall before an audience of about 1,000 people, ending with those stirring words, but a speech that was filled with the sort of grappling ironies of being a commander-in-chief involved in two battlefields, one war that we did not ask for, he says, referring to Afghanistan, another war, Iraq, which, of course, was something that was initiated by the United States.
And he didn't especially sugarcoat anything. There were some harsh realities in his speech about war and about whether or not we could live in a world that where it was completely peaceful.
And a fairly comprehensive evocation of history, referring to the Marshall Plan, referring to the League of Nations, referring to Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela,
the Catholic Church in Poland,
Albert Schweitzer,
yeah.
an enormous scope, as Charlie Sennett, who has been our guest all morning, executive editor of GlobalPost.com, noted. Charlie, initial reactions?
I think it was a very powerful, important, and historic speech. I thought it was very self-effacing. I mean, he, as you pointed out, you know, he went right into that enormous irony looming that here is the man receiving the Peace Prize who is conducting two wars and escalating one of them. I thought it also had a very stirring defense of America's history and sacrificing for peace from World War II to Kosovo. I thought the biggest takeaway for me, though, was a telegraphing of the challenges that he sees as what he needs to do to really have earned this award, and that is setting up the idea that there's going to have to be a tougher enforcement to prevent nuclear proliferation. And I thought when he went into the idea of the history of talking with the enemy, which has a great tradition from John Paul II to Reagan with the Soviets, Nixon with China, he said we have to balance isolation and engagement. That might as well be a direct message to Iran, to North Korea, and even on a smaller level to Hamas and to the Taliban.
But there needs to be an open
negotiate.
Door. There needs to be an open door for repressive nations.
Right.
He said that almost a direct quote. Charlie Sennett, executive editor of GlobalPost.com. Richard Haass, president of the Council on Foreign Relations. You've heard the speech as we heard it. Is this an academic speech or a call to action in your view?
Well, a bit of both. It was a serious speech. It was an attempt to have a serious conversation about some of the tensions or dilemmas of running a foreign policy in this era of history. I thought, for example, the challenge to the world, basically saying if you don't want force to be the only remedy to deal with nuclear proliferation, you had better back robust sanctions against countries like North Korea and Iran. That was, to me, in some ways, the most interesting part of the speech. It was also a speech that tried to defend the president against his domestic critics on foreign policy, who basically said he was carrying out a foreign policy that didn't talk enough or do enough in the human rights area. So he basically tried to make the case that engagement with tyrants is sometimes necessary, and over time it can be the best way to bring about more open societies. But those were the best parts of the speech because they were an attempt to grapple with the serious dilemmas of carrying out a comprehensive foreign policy.
You know, Richard, he evokes the mechanism of achieving peace in an unusual way. He talked about the top-down kinds of issues that you just referred to there, running a foreign policy. But he also talked about grassroots, the sort of small peace prizes that are granted in individual villages and people who are working for peace in their sort of small locations. Do you think that works?
It's probably somewhat rhetorical at one level. On the other hand, take the Middle East. The top-down approach in the Middle East right now between the Israelis and the Palestinians is not working at all. But perhaps the one reason to look, not to be filled with despair, the one positive thing going on between Israelis and Palestinians is what's happening on the ground. The fact that you're beginning to see Palestinian institutions develop. The Palestinian economy is now growing at 6 or 7 or 8%. Palestinian police force is being built up. Israeli checkpoints are being reduced. It's not sexy, grand stuff, but it is a ground-up approach. And in the long run, that actually may have more to do with the future of whether Israelis and Palestinians can live together than any number of special envoys.
Is this speech a fair reflection of the actual Barack Obama foreign policy, or is it a bit of a show piece for the global audience?
Well, I think it's a good question. It's an attempt to explain the fact that the foreign policy isn't simply one-dimensional, that at times you do have to use force, at times you do have to talk to bad guys. It's in that sense, it's a grown-up speech that tries to deal with some of the very real dilemmas, contradictions, tensions of carrying out a global foreign policy.
All right, we're going to take a look at the Middle East coming up at this hour. Richard Haass, President of the Council on Foreign Relations, thanks so much for being with us, Richard. Charlie Sennett, Executive Editor of GlobalPost.com, thanks to you as well. And we are asking all of you for your reactions, and we'll share them with our audience the rest of the hour. 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org. And this question, what does Barack Obama actually have to do? He's laid it out for himself in the speech.
Absolutely.
To deserve this Nobel Peace Prize. You're listening to The Takeaway.